Session number 22575, Reel 2.
This is Frank Newhouse, Reel 2. Right, so you hit the church in the hospital grounds.
Yeah, that was a... I think the hospital had to be evacuated, and all the mental patients were there as well. So how we're going to get out of here without being caught? And we put blankets around ourselves, white blankets. Most of the patients had blankets, and we could all stagger about by this time with difficulty, and. We acted like lunatics going through them, and the Germans went right through them, right close to us, and acting like lunatics, you know. And we got through all right, and spent the night in a shed with some straw in, and just, I think three or four of us. Two of the chaps went off into the woods, or three perhaps, yeah, went off into the woods, and they did eventually get back home. And the other three of us went together. And from this up the next day, a little cart came. A lady with a cart full of straw, and put us under the straw and took us into Ada. Now that story, I told this to a Dutch fellow who was. Asking me, we were doing a history of the Wolfhazen area, and I said, I'm not sure whether that's true or not, because I've seen it on the film. Ah, no, it was true, all right, and he knew the lady as well, so that was fine. And we went to Ada, and we're put into a house with all nice clean sheets and things. That's fine. And probably a day or so later. We were still wounded and still not all that good. And one bloke in particular was ill, quite bad, of the three of us that were there. And somebody said, well, we've got somebody here, we'll take you to a place where you're safe. You know, where you can get looked after, get treatment, and you'll be safe. I thought, well, that's a good idea. And,
have you seen any Germans at this time?
Yeah, they were all over the place. Mm. Yeah, but, you know, you didn't. Didn't take too much notice of them, you know, you just kept your head down, as it were. And this chap came into us, and he was in a nice uniform. I thought it was a Red Cross man. In fact, it was a Dutch Nazi. He had the armband, and he took us to a German field hospital, which wasn't very nice. It was a right horrible place. It was really bad. Only Germans as well, not just British wounded, and bad. And there I saw this chap who had a blast in the stomach who'd been with us, and I was absolutely certain that he died there. And I didn't know he hadn't died there until 40 years later, when somebody in a restaurant in Arnhem said, "Aren't you Frank Newhouse?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm Jack Waters." And it was Jack, and he hadn't died then. So, and from there, a few days later, can't tell how many days, two, three days perhaps, we were lined up for quite a lot of people, prisoners lined up and marched off under guard to a train. And during that time, we were going to Ada, there was a group of prisoners, and all of it. A bit stroppy, you know, as we were. And I saw the Bob Granger, one of the chaps that went into the woods, Sergeant Major he was. And we saw him on a cart with this young lady, Geraldine. And we ignored him, you know, for he was obviously on the loose. we ignored him for his safety, and but I've seen him since. In fact, I went to his funeral about 18 months ago. Mm. Bob.
He got home all right, didn't he?
Eventually, yeah, they were on what we call, what's called Pegasus 1, where the, a lot of people who were on the loose did get back, a couple of hundred or so. Yeah. And from there, we were taken to this railhead, spent one night in a barn, then to the railhead and onto a onto some cattle trucks for a long, long ride into Germany, which is awful. Apparently, it must have been, I think, well, reckon it was 5 days and six nights we were in these trucks onto Germany with the food was missing and water was. And people were all wounded, and it must have been, I think it was 40 men and 8 horses had in the truck, so there's about 50 or 60 men in there. And we eventually got to, after being strafed with our own people, which it happens, we got to a prison camp called Stalag 12A, Limburg. And that was an evil place. Really evil. And one of the we were in three big marquees. You didn't have lay down, it stink, the food was in dustbins, and that's for vile. And it was a shocking. And one of the things there, we had to be cleaned up for some reason or other. And I think it was the second time I'd been really afraid. And we had to get stripped off, in like cages. And the clothes were taken away. And there was a number on them or something. And we had to go in this great big room. Twice as big as the bottom of this house. And I really think it was jam-packed with these. And I thought, Christ, we looked up and there's things in the roof. We'd heard about them. You know, part of our training was you'd hear about these people being killed, you know. We thought,
yes,
I thought, Christ, here we go, you know. And then water came out. it was an evil place, that. Evil.
They treated you badly. I mean, did they abuse you a lot, the guards? And
not particularly. They didn't. You know, they'd use the rifle butts on you if they needed to, but they didn't treat us as cruel as you hear that some of the Japanese people. They didn't treat us as cruel as you hear the stories from Japan. But they didn't. One little thing I did there, I had a watch, a fancy watch, what they call a G10 watch. And I was starving, and in the next compound were some Russians. And they were, and they had a loaf of bread, tap the wrist, they wanted a watch, and they told the watch over to throw the bread over. And that's a good idea, so I fell for it. I threw the watch, and they threw the bread. I thought, God, I've got a loaf of bread, there's two or three of us. And that's just the job. And then the buggers had hollered, they'd take the inside out, the kilo loaf, take the inside out, just a shell. But they wouldn't have lived very long if we'd have got hold of them. And then from there I went on to after a few days there, an interrogation camp it was as well. And strange enough, we were taught what to do with our number, rank and name, you know, that's it, you know. No units, no information at all. So then this bloke, you know, he pushed me over a couple of times, and then he said, well, I'll tell you, and he told me exactly what unit I was with, exactly what I did. And so it was a bit of a waste of time, as they already knew. So,
and then I went, the information from somewhere, though.
Yeah, they'd got it from somewhere. There was always a story that they had all the records, but the records that they had couldn't have been as detailed as they knew. So, then went to another camp, which was just a where a lot of airmen were there sitting it out. That's what we call it, sitting it out, you know. So if we wanted to be back home, you know, we'd be away. And they departed down to a working Arbeitskommando. And the one I was with was, I went to, was in Dresden, which was a lovely place. Great. And we didn't get treated bad. We didn't get any food, but didn't get treated bad. Unless we went to... And what we had to do is to work for your money, because we were privates. And you were obliged to do some work. And our particular commando was to help with the local authority. And we'd go down each morning, very early in the morning, into Dresden, and be allocated a guard and a foreman, as it were, and go doing work on the town.
What's that, sweeping the streets and that sort of thing?
Well, the odd bomb was dropping at that time. The Yanks used to come over sometimes and drop the odd bomb and anything, you know, just cleaning out the sewers and all sorts of menial tasks. And,
were you still wearing your uniforms?
We still had the same same clothes, but we'd been given a long green coat with red triangles on, so that you couldn't get away. Everything had red triangles on. Call ourselves the Red Triangle Gangs at that time. And yeah, so I still had the same boots when I got back. And but we used to go out cleaning up the old bomb debris, bits and pieces. And one of our chaps, he'd be searched every time he came in. And one of our chaps had, it was after the bombing, this, so it didn't quite follow. But eventually Dresden was bombed.
That was in February 45.
February 45, yeah, 13,
14. You were there then, were you?
Yeah. And that was, I've never been popular for saying it shouldn't have been done, but it was an atrocious thing to do. I still can't understand it. And the casualty figures that you publish for the deaths in Dresden are very, very conservative. You can get to 200,000 and it's very, very conservative. It was awful.
Did you actually come into the city the morning after the bombing?
We went in the morning after. We did have, we only had one incendiary on our little camp. It was only three huts, two huts to live in. About a mile or so. Mm-hmm. And there was only three huts, one for washing and things, two for living in, and one for the guards. And I had an incentive bomb in there. That was fine. But then, yeah, we went in the next morning, but it was so horrific that they just took us back into camp.
What did you see?
We saw flames and smoke and bodies and all sorts of things. The place was still on fire, you know. It was horrendous. And about three or four days before they let us out to work again, and then we had to clear the bomb debris there, and that was quite a full-time job, and move the bodies out and pick up the bits, and it was awful time. What we did see was a church which was which had survived the bombing. And two or three days later, it fell in on itself. And people were inside shouldering, because it was one of the few places. And I gather that now they're trying to do it up again. So that would be lovely. But during this period, if there's anything, you'd pick it up and eat it if you had a bit of food or anything, or a cigarette end or anything like that. But the story goes that I didn't smoke. And you'd go around, I picked this thing up, you know, and I thought it was the end of a cigar. And it was a child's finger. I picked it up to flog it for bread, you know.
It was a little child's finger. And another time, this was around everybody who was doing similar things, I picked up a shoe, and there's a little child's foot in it, and things like that. It was absolutely shocking. It was. Anyway, I was telling you the story about to Canada. When you came in, you got searched. And Canada, our French-Canadian friend, he'd been in some bombing, and he got some bacon. Probably a piece of bacon about that thing, and it just looked like a brick, and it was all covered in, and he'd hidden it down his inside his legs, trying to get it into camp, and he got caught, and he had to be tried, of course, because it was a, anyway, he got tried, he got sentenced to death, and we saw him the night before he was due to be killed, and on the next morning, on a Pell. The Germans always used to line up in fives. They were only talking fives, you know. Alles Fünfer. Fives, of course, we were making fours and getting them all tight, you know. Anything to raise them. And they said, right, Bennington Newhouse, no work today. I thought, hello. So anyway, we didn't go to work. Everybody went off. And then a little guard came. And he said, right, you've got to come with me. And we went all the way through Dresden, up into some woods on the top of Dresden. And he said, all right, then, come on. You've got to dig a hole, a couple of spades, you know, took spades with us. I dig a hole, 2 metres wide, 2 metres deep, and 2 metres long, 2 metres deep, and half a metre wide. Fair enough, we start digging, you know, two of us digging. And anyway, we got down so far, I could only one of us get in the hole, so I was just trying to wander around, you know, just in this immediate area. And I saw a piece of cardboard, and on it it said, I think there was Ein Wegen Plunderung erschlossen Kriegsgefangene, which I interpreted in my loose German, you could speak the language if we were there, a prisoner of war shot for looting. So, I went to the, went, hey, on Benny, out. We said to the guy, we're not, no more digging. Nix more, nix Arbeit. Poor little old fella, you know. He said, come out, Arbeit. No. So he cocked his rifle, you know. No, we knew he wouldn't shoot us. Oh, we hoped he wouldn't. And he said, come last. He had one of these old French rifles with a long bayonet on. And he says, come out. And he stuck the bayonet, you know, about half inch into behind, you know. And I said, no, poor old chap. And I was just coming through the woods. We had somebody come in. And it was a German SS officer, or NCO, whichever, with a section of recruits he was training. And he asking the bloke what was up, you know, and bloke said, oh, you know, these people won't work. And this bloke just went, Arbeit. You never see anybody dig as hard in your life. we were down to 6 foot before, and that's the difference. We knew that bloke could kill us, he'd shoot us. So we dug. We didn't think that the guard would. So we didn't, but by God, didn't we dig that hole when he was down? And it was for Canada, he did get shot. Yeah, but we reported it to the confidence man when we got back, but nothing ever happened because they did the same to their own people, only they didn't try them, they just shot them on the ground as they were noticed all over the town, you know. Mm. So that was an experience.
When you were at work clearing up the wreckage, was there a lot of ill will shown to you by Germans? Were you identified as prisoners of war?
Well, they knew we were prisoners. There was hundreds and hundreds of prisoners in the area. No, they didn't. The only time they showed us any animosity was when the Battle of the Bulge was on. And we had to be down a... They were reasonable with us most of the time. And when the Battle of the Bulge was on, they suddenly became aggressive again because they were winning again. And I thought that was odd. And after that, they were all right with it. They never they didn't hold much against us. The people we were afraid of were the capos. If we had to go to places like a woodyard or something where there was a pole, was we used to didn't like to go there.
Who were the capos?
Well, they're trusted prisoners.
Oh.
And they're sort of people who look after themselves and punish your mates, you know. And pretty good, this pole was there, and if you didn't work out, you had a piece of 2x2, and he'd belt you with it, you know. But those sort of, we didn't like that at all. But it was a quite an experience. But after a while, we the Russians were advancing, and we were moved out of the camp and out of Dresden towards follow the Elbe down towards Czechoslovakia in the about the March, end of March, April 45, and we eventually our guards gradually disappeared one by one for one reason or another.
You were being marched, were you down there?
Yeah, we were being marched, and sometimes we got fed, not often. But we finished it with no guards, just on the loose and begging for food. Habergeons, Kartoffelbitter, you know, that type of a thing. And some kind people did. But my recollection of the time is I've got everything I want now. Well, I've got everything I need now. And at that particular time, I was glad because I had a tin, a rusty old tin with it, with top bent back, so that I could get some water out of a stream. And that's all I had in the world, nothing else. And I'd sort of all the, you know, the dozen blokes that were with me on the loose in these mountains, in northern Czechoslovakia. So, you know, we think we're lucky.
Did you catch animals and kill them for meat, or...?
Well, they'd all gone, yeah. But, most of them were stealing or begging.
Mm.
Yeah, stealing or begging. We did have a case where we saw that it was tatty planting time as well. And we saw this lady, old woman. Well, the men, there were very few men about. So this old woman planting taties. So I thought, I'll get them buggers tonight. And we went round and... In the night, we got all the taties and picked them all up and took them away and boiled them up and ate them. And the next day, we were going around and we knocked at this door and I said, you know, you can have a hunger. Somebody had a kartoffel bitter, you know. And she said, oh, come on in. Come in. And she gave boilers some, and some potatoes boiled up and a little bit of chicken soup in it, you know, and taties. And it was a lady that we'd stolen her taties out of the ground. And her son was a prisoner in was a German in the German army, and he was a prisoner in Canada, Army and Air Force prisoner in Canada, and ever after that I was when I was picking taters, I always thought for years and years. At tater picking time, you know, I always thought of that poor lady. And we'd nicked all, and she'd be waiting for the taters to come up, and with the sort of things you do. But, we eventually got back home.
Who did you meet up with?
The first people we met were Russians, which was at in Czechoslovakia at a place called Carlsbad. We went down there and we were knocking at the door in this little town. It was a spa town, apparently. We didn't know at the time, it was just somewhere with some houses. And we knocked at this door and this lady came. She said, oh, come in. And she was terrified because the Russians were on the way. We'd already passed some of them, and, you know, to British, you know, showed a little flag or something. And she said, come in. And she fed us, and her husband was German, and she was afraid of the Russians. And we slept in a bed that night in her house, and the Russians came knocking at the door, and they were looting, raping and looting all over the place. It was a right horrible town, really, when they got there. They were a bit of animals, some of them. And they came knocking at this door, and we said, no, British, and they went away. So, yeah, first time I slept under a duvet. Yeah. And then we went and we met the Yanks eventually, and they took us to a. We did go a long way. We got to Regensburg, and we had to walk over. Regensburg Bridge was down. It was a long, long way from where we'd been. We'd been walking for a month. And we took these Yanks, and they took us to an airfield. They fed us with too much food, that is bad. And took us to an airfield and gave us some couple of jerry cans of petrol and a car, and told us to go to, I think it was Brussels. So we got in the car, four of us got in this car and drove to Brussels and got deloused and then home. Mm. It was quite an experience, really.
So how were you demobbed shortly after you got home, or what?
No, we went on leave. We got double ration allowance and double rations, and on leave and to grow up, you know, to get a bit better. Because I must have weighed about 8 stone when I got back, and that's not my build doesn't go for 8 stone. And about 3 months later, about 3 months on leave, and then. Then back again and retrained and stayed in the parachute regiment for a few more years.
You signed on for a certain number of years, didn't you?
No, I was still on the duration sort of.
Yeah, hostility only.
Yeah. And but I got back in the regiment, which a lot of people couldn't, but a lot did manage to get back in the regiment and. Stayed in and then signed on again and stayed until the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And then joined the TA after that. Joined the Pala TA after that. And,
did you see any action in your...
No.
You didn't go to Malaya or anything?
No. It was an odd thing because there weren't many people who had... could give us all... jobs training and things like that, and they let the young lads go over there. It was a thing up to. Yeah.
So where were you based, Aldershot or?
I was based at Shorncliffe. Mm. Shorncliffe, and there my brother joined the regiment there, so my brother was at Shorncliffe with me, so that was a good period for about 3 or 4 months. And then the troubles in Palestine arose. And he was taken to go to Palestine, and I wasn't. Well, they wouldn't let me go to Palestine with him. So I was sort of depot based then for a bit, and then posted to the glider pilot regiment in at Booker to look after the glider pilots. Just they were all sergeants with privates with 3 stripes, the glider pilots, like flying Air Force people, aren't they? And then eventually came to Cliff Pipehead, and then back to Aldershot for my last 2 or 3 years at the depot. Yeah.
So you're a peacetime soldier then?
Yeah.
And what did you do when you come out of the army?
When I came out, I worked in the railway for a bit, Swindon. Yeah, I couldn't get on with it through the early 1950s, and I couldn't get on with the attitudes of some of the people there. Particular bloke, I was qualified for one or two things then, and I got a job at Paddington and at the headquarters to work at Swindon. Mm. And when I went for this job, the bloke said, "Oh," he says, "you're Newhouse, are you?" I said, "Yes, I'm Mr. Newhouse, Mr. Proudler." And he said, he said, "You've been in the army, haven't you?" I said, "That's right." He said, "Well, we don't care very much for people who've been in the services here." And I said, "Well, touche." I said, "We don't care very much for people who haven't. So, you know, we're off to a good start." And he was a governor. So I didn't get off to a good start. but that's the attitude that we had. And